You know, they have those videos of cats, like, when you give them ice cream or something. Yeah. And they go... that thing. Do you not do that when you drink water?
I'm so sorry for interrupting the podcast. Let's get back to the task at hand. Rick.
This is your fault. Anyway... And welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 522. My name's James Gilmore. Joining me today, it's Rick Cowley.
Hello, hello. It's me again. It's always me.
Always you. After the success. The success it was of Launchpad.
It was a huge success, James, and we shouldn't be ashamed of ourselves for finding it as such. It was magnificent in every possible way. I did a great job.
Yes, of course.
Everybody else was fine, but I was fantastic.
Rick, the linchpin Cowley, held it all together, as he always does. No, it was great. I know you people on the channel, on the YouTube channel, have seen the videos popping up, and I think they're all going, what is this, what the channel is now? 2-hour live streams of stuff. And they're like, what? And no, don't worry, it's not that. We're going back to normal today, in fact, we're going back to normal. But we wanted to push them over onto the YouTube channel as well. But yes, if you didn't realise, we did these big Twitch streams last week, 3 days in a row. Rick kicked it off with me on the Thursday, and then it was myself and Danielle Partes, who is currently Influencer Update and in the future other things. And then on the final day, it was Dan Sullivan, who is the, you know him for the podcast, edits the pocketgamer.com. And it was really
he organised the whole thing, you know, that guy.
Yeah, the one who made my life worse for a while. It was really good. Like, we got ridiculous. We were running at like 17,500 concurrent views on Twitch every night, and we got like 3 million views over the course of 3 days. And yep. This is obviously sounds great. We're part of a larger network, part of a larger family, like Pocket Gamer and Pocket Gamer Biz, and everything's part of Steel Media. And Steel Media is part of Enthusiast Gaming, which is its own, like, they do like live events, and that's what they do, like B2C live stream stuff. Yep. So we were working with them, and they were obviously pushing us out over their network as well. So we got a far wider reach. If it was just me on my private Twitch channel pressing go, and then three people tune in, one of whom is my mum. So there are reasons, but overall it was great. We had a wonderful time. It was incredibly stressful, and I was glad when it was over. But we should probably chat newsy things. Sorry that we weren't there for the actual podcast last week, but if you missed us in any way, if you're listening, I thought, oh, they weren't there. We were there. 6 hours of it. Go check it out. It's all on YouTube. Plenty more than you can possibly handle, I suspect, of it. But let's go back to the daily grind, the news, the things that are happening in the mobile world, including Google and its 4G, 5G streaming plans for Stadia. We've got a massive upgrade to Grindstone, one of Rick's old games, what he'd done, played a bunch of. Marvel Duel has appeared, and we'll tell you where to get it. We've got the first look at Nier Reincarnation's closed beta, plus a whole bunch of new releases, including Interloper, the Tides of Oblivion expansion, a Pascal's Wager, Agretsuko, the short timer. Rick's been playing it. We've got a snooker game. We've got Gloom Digital Edition. More stuff as well. But first, the news. Stadia, something of a recurring theme on the podcast. More and more news has been dribbling out recently. The latest of which is Google adding 4G and 5G capabilities to the Stadia app. This is part of a new, and I love the fact there's air quotes in this, experiment for the service. We're experimenting with the service. Let's make it good. But the thing is, right, this has a knock-on negative effect as well. So on the one hand, previously you've had to be hooked up to the Wi-Fi in order to do Stadia on your Pixel phone or something like that. And now they're going, right, okay, we'll let you stream and we'll allow you to do it when you're properly mobile. So 4G and 5G. This has some effects, one of which is, A, you won't be able to use the Google Stadia controller, because in order for that to work, you need to be hooked up to a wireless network. That's how the controller communicates with the phone. So if you're using 4G or 5G, then you can't use your controller, which means Does it support other controllers? Can you do like Bluetooth? So you have to use a Bluetooth controller?
So you can use a Bluetooth controller, you can use a wired controller, which apparently is a thing, or you can use on-screen virtual controls, which don't do that. That would be a bad idea.
Yeah, good one, Rick. Yeah, lovely. Yeah, brilliant. The other thing is it's giving you the amount of data that it will use over that period. So if you're using 4G or 5G, you're talking 2.7 gigabytes of data per hour. You're like, that's quite a lot if you're on a plan, if you're on like a 10 gig or 12 gig plan. That's a big chunk of it. But as you said in the story, that's running the game at 360p.
Yep. So not exactly the highest of resolutions.
No, that's 2.7 gig per hour for like the lowest possible tier YouTube grainy ass. But this doesn't sound appealing at all, Rick.
I mean, it has some appeal in the fact that you will be able to play it wherever you are instead of, well, as long as you have phone signal, instead of having to be connected to the Wi-Fi all the time. But at the moment, not a great thing. Now, the thing about the 360p is that Google has not actually confirmed that that's the case. That's just estimates made by, I think it was 9to5 Google, who originally sort of reported on this. They reckoned that that's what it was, and then if you bump it up, you're going to double that resolution. That's going to cost you like 5.4 gigabyte per hour. Or, you know, if you want it at full HD 1080p, that's going to be over 10 gig an hour, which is not going to be suitable for a lot of people.
And that's bad compression as well. Like, if you are watching stuff on Netflix, for example, and you're watching like you watch something at 1080 and it's a 45 minute show, it's probably only about like 6 gig maybe, 5, 6 gig. So they put a particular kind of compression on it to make it work. So that's, if these data readings are true, that's not brilliant compression that they're using there to get the stuff over.
But again, that's just an estimate. Like, Google hasn't officially said, as far as I know, officially said what the resolution is and what compression and optimizations they are doing. But I think it's really cool. I think this is definitely what needs to happen in the future. And it's something that, when you consider other streaming platforms like xCloud, already has this and had it from the start and isn't sort of like a weird experimental beta thing. It's just been there from the beginning, and people have been using it and saying it's really good. So this is the step that Google Stadia should be going in the direction of, because that's exactly what this whole technology is all about, really. Is as much as Stadia is about like, oh, getting rid of the console and getting rid of updates and all that kind of thing, it's about getting games anywhere of the highest quality on any console, on any screen.
And 5G is a big factor as well, because the data rates, whenever they've done the 5G test, once they roll it out, and I know it's been controversial about who's providing the 5G, and in the UK we've had this big thing of like, you know, not allowing people to have monopolies of it, and it's all in flux at the moment. But,
well, not allowing Chinese companies to be involved because we're all terrified that they're in the pockets of the Chinese government, which feels a little bit suspicious.
But you can walk outside and pull down like 300 megabits per second easy. So like the connection is incredible, and so if you can pull down those figures, then this kind of stuff is nothing. You can stream 4K no problem. Like, but then it comes to like, all right, then what about data caps? You need to have basically a service where you have infinite data, and even then they have fair use kind of things on it. So when you start downloading like 12 terabytes every week, people start going, all right, no, we didn't, when we said infinite, we did not actually mean infinite. You didn't see the little asterisk that was there next to the word. I know this because I've had to, you know, I pull down like certain video projects I'm doing with people. I have to pull down like 350 gig online over the course of a day or two. And I can just see my sort of service provider like eyebrow popping when he's looking at, someone get a van around there. Something's going on. I don't like it.
Send the boys over. Exactly. Someone needs to have a word about what unlimited really means.
Well, the other thing regarding the Stadia business is they've signed some new people. We have been criticizing in a joking way, but also semi-serious way about like, but what about the games though? There are no games. And they've announced that they're bringing in Konami, Harmonix, and Supermassive to create some exclusive games for the platform.
Yeah,
that's nice.
Not hugely surprising from Harmonix, who love to get involved as like exclusive games on literally every platform.
Oh yeah, that's true. I suppose like they've done the Oculus one recently. Not even that recently.
Yeah, well, they did like Oculus. They did VR. They did Apple TV when that was very briefly trying to be a games console as well. They did Beat Sports, which they eventually ported to Switch as Super Beat Sports. Okay. Like any time there is a new console, Harmonix signs on. Supermassive, I think, is really interesting because Supermassive are the team behind Until Dawn and the Dark.
The somewhat less successful Dark follow-up thing. Yeah. Dark Anthology, whatever it is. They've released some chapters of that. And the reviews on that have not been stellar. And I liked Until Dawn. I thought Until Dawn was cool. I really enjoyed it.
But they've previously been like a Sony exclusive company. Mm. So it's interesting that they're now branching out into doing Stadia as well. Of all the consoles they could pick, it's the one of the more interesting ones that they could have done. And the Konami thing is they are basically doing like a follow-up to Super Bomberman R, which was a Switch launch exclusive.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, okay.
But they're doing it as like, it's going to be like a bigger multiplayer experience now. I think it's basically Battle Royale Bomberman. And it'll be exclusive to Stadia at launch, probably for like 6 months, and then come out elsewhere. So,
as always, the story with Stadia to me is still check back in a year.
Yeah, pretty much. Next year I can put it on this
and give it a try. Then we'll see. Yes, and it might be the same story next year. We'll see. We'll see. But we've got to keep following it because, you know, it could be the future. I know we're talking about it a lot on this podcast. Probably sick of hearing about it, but there's a reason. This could possibly be the way all games are before long. So, moving on to games you can actually get at the minute. Grindstone, which I believe is still Apple Arcade, right?
Yeah.
It's Apple Arcade, yeah. And it's been one of the good ones. It's been one of the ones that people have really liked. I know you played it for a bunch. We've got updates. So, the latest update's called The Daily Grind, which gives you new levels, daily challenges, and gold gear. So, 50 new levels in total. That's, 230 levels. And they're authored as well. This isn't some, like, roguelike thing, is it?
Yeah.
That's good. Very nice.
Have you not played Grindstone?
I did. I played it when it was originally launched, and I did some... Because it's that, you know, colour matching, but it's a battle, and you're kind of drawing those wonderful snaking lines between the soldiers, and then... I didn't, you know, clearly I didn't go deep like you did, but no, it was... I was surprised that it was a nice and fun thing. So the idea, you have to... With this daily grind thing, you do four levels each day, right? And you have to do four tough levels in a single life. That's the
right.
And then every time you clear a level, you get to choose a piece of gear from a selection of three. So that's kind of the angle. You're gear grabbing if you're particularly good. And there are a couple of new bits of gear to grab, which is the pickaxe and the gold rush garb. And they help you collect golden nuggets, apparently. I don't know what these are. But
so it's a bit like a rogue-like being put into the game. But it's like a daily challenge thing. That's actually pretty interesting. I like that a lot.
That's nice. So it's, still Apple Arcade, so you have to subscribe to get involved with it. But I'm still waiting for them figures. I still want to see what the retention figures are for Apple Arcade. I don't think they've released a lot. You would know. You're a stats guy. Has Apple bared its soul regarding the current number of people on Apple Arcade?
Apple has not ever said anything about it. They unlikely ever will. developers are under, like, strict... I don't even remember what the name is. You know,
NDAs?
I mean? Yeah, NDAs. I was going to say DNA, but that's not the right thing. Yeah, developers are all under strict NDAs to not talk about it, because every time we talk to, like, an Apple Arcade developer on Biz... And we say, so what kind of numbers are you looking at? And they're like, oh, people really like our game. Okay, that's not a number, but sure. And which is entirely fair. I mean, if you have a proprietary system and you're trying to get people to sign up, you don't want to... Well, that's the thing, isn't it? If there were big numbers, they'd be shouting about it, you would assume.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose... Like, Netflix has started to reveal a lot more, especially with the movies. And it's always like, this has broken our record, rather than, this didn't get any... Look at this. This is a joke. They only show when it's... They only crow when the numbers... are enormous.
Exactly. So, but you'd at least think they would even hit like milestones of like, oh, we have 1 million subscribers, they have 5 million subscribers. Yeah. And they've never done that. So it like the fact how quiet Apple are being and how quiet all the developers are being is very curious and makes you wonder how well the system's actually going.
We mentioned a few podcasts ago about the fact they're changing the games that they're targeting for the service to the point where they were working with some developers and then they went, actually, no, we don't want your game anymore, or some words to that effect, because we're looking at a different way of kind of engaging with the audience and now your game maybe isn't that anymore. So they're clearly learning from what they've experienced so far and trying to optimize it. And that means dropping, I think, and it looks like they're dropping like the single player-ish short game narrative stuff in favor of the more long retention the daily grind.
Yes, exactly.
In fact,
Grindstone. That's what they want. This is the kind of game that they are looking for, and if they can get more people hooked on this kind of thing on Apple Arcade, then more games like that will come, and more people will start coming in, and it gives people a reason to keep subscribing if there's more content slowly coming out, rather than paying, like getting that free subscription, playing one game, like smashing through Beyond a Steel Sky in a weekend or something, and then not renewing their thing, which is reportedly the problem, is that people are signing up to play one or two games and then not renewing their subscriptions afterwards.
Yeah, which makes sense, which is, you know, probably what I would do if I was paying for a sub. So, we'll obviously give you more information on the Apple Arcade thing as well, it appears, because we are going to follow that as well. Again, the future, potentially. It's not a rocky start, like with Stadia, but could be the future. So, let's go to Marvel, more massive ongoing franchises that never ever stop. So, Marvel Duel has just been released, I should say, for iOS and Android. This is in Thailand, Indonesia, Philippines, and Malaysia. We're reporting on this because this means it's probably quite close to a European and US release, if they've actually proper released it, rather than it being a closed beta sort of thing. It's, I say, iOS and Android as well, dual launch on both platforms. Now, we were slightly confused about this because there was some information that came out during Launchpad last week when we showed some exclusive stuff from them. And when you watch the videos and look at the information, it looks like a card battler, like a kind of standard, you know, Hearthstone-ish, lay cards on the table, Gwent, cards battle out. Mm-hmm. But the information we were getting from the developers and that were that they were talking about it being more like a battle chessy kind of thing. And I was convinced we were getting some kind of crossed wires, because it's like, it's not, though. No, no, it will be when it goes to launch. And I'm like, well, apparently it's launched now, and I'm looking at the launch trailer, and it's definitely a card battler. So I don't know what's going on there. Either way, you can see the trailer for it up on PG.com if you want to. And if you're in one of those regions, you can get involved. But I reckon, you know, month or two, and then we'll see this appearing here. It looks like it's got a lot of cash behind it. It looks very slick. But we haven't been able to get our hands on it. I'm sure we're going to do a little. We might get access to it somehow, and Dave or Aubrey will do a little preview thing for us. So if you're interested to see what that looks like, possibly more interesting, at least to me, Nier Reincarnation. So this hasn't reached the partial release stage. We're still in closed beta at the moment, but gameplay footage has appeared online, and it looks fascinating. I had to double check with this because I was like, it looks very much like it could be the kind of thing you do with a console game. And I didn't know if it was some little sub spin-off from Nier Automata or something like that. And no, this is a full mobile game. It's got a lot of the stuff you'd recognize from Nier. And I haven't played Nier, but I followed the coverage and I've, you know, watched a bunch of it. And I know that they do the thing where they switch between different genres, different points of view, and, you know, side-scrolling, and then 3D third person, and then shmup and stuff like that. And it seems to be doing that stuff. You've got a lovely, you can see in the footage they've released, it's like 13 minutes you can see here. And then another video underneath it, which is like a full 16 minutes as well, an additional one. And it's doing all that stuff. It starts off as like a black and white 2D side-scroller, then it turns into a 3D, and it looks almost like, it makes me think of Ico more than anything else.
Yeah, that very stark style and that sort of slow movement kind of thing. I've never played Ico. I've seen like screenshots and footage of it, but yeah, I know the kind of feeling castle, that you're going old, for. Yeah,
big old stone castle, and then the camera kind of moves into interesting different positions depending on where you go. And then suddenly it goes all color, and then you're into a more much close quarters third person combat, which is much more reminiscent of the game. But instead of it being the, I guess, platinum style brawler, this looks more RPG-ish, as in you've got your characters and you've got your two attacks on the side, and I imagine an automatic lock-on from the look of it.
Yeah.
So, like the console versions of the game, they seem to be experimenting with genre and experimenting with the form of it all, which is kind of cool. But I was surprised it looked like it did.
It did. It looks way more, because I've not really been following it. Not because I don't like Nier, but just because, again, like you, I've never really played it. I've not finished even the first playthrough of Nier Automata, and I don't know if I even got that far in it. I feel like I put like 8 hours into that game and then can get anywhere. But I really love the style. I love that guy. Who does the thing?
Is this another one of your Suda 51 sweary types?
Yeah, okay. Yoko Taro.
Right.
He's the guy who wears the moon head and...
Yes.
Yeah. Sure. And this is all his sort of thing. I love all the stuff that he does, and he's a very interesting individual. Not just because he wears a moon head at all times. So I'm interested in this, but I haven't really been keeping up with it because I'm kind of just like, well, I'll play it when I play it. But I had a skim through the video before we started recording this, and it does look really good. Like, really, as you say, like, it does not look like a mobile game whatsoever.
It switches to something that almost looks like a 16-bit cut scene at some point, where it looks like it turns into a Western.
Yeah.
With like, it goes through so many different styles. And you're like, this is bold, interesting stuff. Because my assumption would be like, all right, then they'll pick one element of Nier, then maybe pick the shmup bit, and they'll do like a mobile spin-off where it's just that. But no, they appear to be doing a whole new thing.
Yeah, this is a Nier game. This isn't like a Nier spin-off or a mobile approximation of what Nier would be. This is a Nier game. It just happens to be on mobile, which I think is fascinating. And must be so, so difficult to make as well.
God, yes, I imagine. Well, the thing that we don't know is when it's going to come over here. So this is the closed beta. It's all currently in Japanese at the minute. All the videos are in Japanese. And we don't have a Western release date for it. But as... who wrote the article? Cameron? Cameron points out in the article that Sinnoh Alice did eventually come over here. Yeah. It was a bunch of years later, but it did come over here. So it looks like we could get it. And I hope we do, because this looks fascinating.
I'm sure we will. I think Nier has like proven itself successful in the West, and there's the console remake of the first Nier game is definitely coming to the West, I believe. So yeah, so there's definitely interest in our market for this kind of game and for Yoko Taro's work. So I think it'll definitely at some point come over, but who knows? Because it's all still in beta and it's still being developed and. Who knows even what
your,
the game is?
Your optimistic take.
Oh yeah,
I like the it'll definitely come over. We'll run with that. That's the party line. So as soon as we get more videos, obviously we'll let you know. But Nier Reincarnation, go check out the beta gameplay on the site. It looks cool. And finally, Rick, finally in news, Farming Simulator 20's got new vehicles. You know how much I love Farming Simulator, Rick, and how I play it every day.
So right? I actually do love Farming Simulator. Not that I play it very regularly. I love all really? Simulator games. Do tell me more about these.
Oh, mate.
Are there any Pocket Rocket Tractors in there? Because that's my...
Not Pocket Rocket Tractors. I can tell you, however, that you're looking at getting your hands on a John Deere S790 Combine Harvester.
Oh, hell yeah. That's raw power there.
Also within the John Deere category, you've got a 9620 RX Tractor, 718C header. I don't know what headers are. What are headers in the scheme of...
No idea.
Okay. Or a semi-trailer loading wagon made by someone called Fleigel. That's so... It's happening.
100% in your wheelhouse.
I'm not knocking this. I really like Elite, and I spend ages bimbling around doing, like, deliveries for people in space that takes 20 minutes, which is just driving from A to Z, really. Listening to the radio, the in-game radio, where they're talking about a princess being abducted, a space princess. So I got no ground to talk on. I get excited about the idea of, like, you know, just swapping out the landing gear in my ship. So... Combine harvesters, it's not a million miles away. And I respect the community of all of these, all the Euro Truck Simulator stuff. In fact, the new one is the Microsoft Flight Sim.
Oh, yeah. That looks like amazing.
It looks lush. And every time, I'm a sucker for this now because I've, as you can see on the stream, I've got my HOTAS. There it is. Woo. I've got my HOTAS sticks. I've got my VR over there. And every time someone says brand new Super Swish Flight Sim, I'm like, ooh. Being as I can't get on a plane at the moment and don't really want to, and I'm missing traveling across the Atlantic, I can just hop in a 747 and pilot it for 8 hours in real time while my wife sits there like this.
You'll be in VR. I mean, I don't think it has VR support, but you could just put it on and just use it as a TV, right?
Surely it must do. Come on. Don't tell me it hasn't got VR support.
I don't know if it does. I'm sorry.
What? Hang on. I don't care the fact that this is... I'm leaving this in the podcast. Client Sim VR, come on now. Don't do this to me. Will support one VR headset this fall.
Just the one, though. And you probably don't have it.
It says only a single headset at first. As opposed to what? Like, me having a co-pilot and him being logged in as well? I wasn't aware that I could plug two. I don't care. Either way, I'm validated. It's clearly not launching with it, but in autumn, VR. Good. Now I have to buy it. Damn.
It's all right. It'll be on Games Pass. Just get that instead. Which comes with xCloud later this year, which is a mobile thing.
Really?
I looped it back in. Oh, yeah. Do you not know about that?
I didn't. Well, I suppose it's Microsoft, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, Games Pass, I guess, quickly talk about. Yeah, so xCloud will be part of Games Pass, and all the games available on Games Pass will be available through xCloud, I think October, November, when it probably
launches.
That's
right, we mentioned on the last, the final podcast for this one. Yeah, we covered that good stuff. Yes, they did well with that. That whole announcement was like, yep, all of this, yes, good. This is a very good and well done. Carry on.
Flight sim on your mobile. Probably, maybe.
Yeah, might look a bit crap. No, give me the VR stuff, and also, of course, the Squadrons, EA's Star Wars game, which I'm incredibly excited for. But yeah, get yourself a John Deere 658 header in Farming Sim 2020.
Woo!
Out and about this week, we're going to stick with the flying around theme with Interloper, which is a game that we did a preview of about a month or so ago. What we're dealing with is a in-cockpit space flighty sim, arcade style, so you are mostly involved in just blowing the crap out of everything that appears. Initially, it's very wave-based, so you've got loads and loads of enemies flying at your face, and you just have to survive for a set period of time. And it's quite good fun. So, don't know, have you played it? No,
I haven't. I had a quick look at it because it's a premium title, isn't it? So it's
It's a $4.99. It's dearer than I was expecting.
So I didn't get a chance to actually play it, but I looked at one of the screenshots, and it seems like you're sort of, it's that very, like, I'm guessing you're sort of just locked in this cockpit view the whole time. And are you flying around in the world, or things
you
coming
are flying
at you? Right.
You know, you're flying about, but people are popping in from all over the place. Okay. So you're always... It's kind of that... It looks very kind of lo-fi in so much as it's the low-poly, old-fashioned flight sim. Speaking of things like X-Wing and stuff like that, it looks better than that, but like it looks deliberately quite lo-fi. Mm-hmm. And you can fly around. You've got full control. It's virtual sticks. You've got quite a lot of customization where you can change, you know, invert sticks and change... whether you want to like look left and right, or whether you want it to roll or pitch and yaw and all that. So you can tweak it to make it comfortable for you. And it feels pretty comfortable when you're doing it. When you get an enemy in your sights, it's kind of auto fire. So it does that thing that it does with most first person shooter games. So it keeps it nice and fluid and flowing. All you have to worry about is aiming and then dodging lots of asteroids, which are also flying around the place. And it does a pretty good job of keeping things... It keeps you feeling under pressure, which is what I liked about it. So it is throwing a lot of stuff at you. You do have to be careful where you steer, but mostly you are focusing on the enemies and trying not to get completely battered. You don't have anything like shield control or stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's mostly about like try and take them out as quickly as possible. Time is your enemy here. The longer you stay floating around, the more likely you are to have the crap blown out of you. So take them out dead quick, and then when you get back to your home screens or whatever, you can start swapping things in and out. So you've got two weapon ports you can switch around as you get more weapons. You can load in a different, what's the other thing, I think there are some armor stuff you can mess with as well. But there's not a lot of customization. There's maybe about like 5 or 6 nodes on the ship that you can tweak and play around with. But the thing it does nicely is because the time limits, like survive for X amount of time, it's usually about like 90 seconds, 2 minutes. So it's mobile play, nice and short, keep things, you know, pacey. Swarms of fighters come in, you take them all out, and then boom, on to the next mission. If you get killed midway through, it kind of wipes your loadout, so you have to reload your ship again.
Okay.
So there's an incentive to kind of keep it going and keep the flow. And keep smashing the crap out of everything. If you want to use your MFI controllers or anything, you can. It does support the controllers as well. But the touchscreen stuff was pretty good, and I had a nice time. Now, apparently, it's even more expensive. It's $5.99 or £5.99.
Yes, I thought so.
So that's obviously premium. No ads, no IAPs or anything, and they're expecting to add more content post-launch. I haven't played enough to judge where I think it's worth £6. That's quite a lot for what is sort of a short burst arcadey kind of thing. I'd like to play more of the release version because we were playing on a test flight build, which is the one I've got on my phone. So, you know, work in progress and all that. So, it was positive. Like, check out the video we've got on AppSpy and we'll look into it. AppSpy? Ooh. There you go. Freudian slip there. On Pocket Gamer's YouTube channel. Going back a bit. But yeah, it's certainly worth a look, especially if you're into the flight sim-y stuff. It feels good on mobile in a way that some don't. So, Interloper is the name of that one. What have you been playing, Rick? You've been playing a couple of things.
What have I been playing? So, I had my eyes a bit down for the first half of this podcast, and that was because I was busy playing a game.
You like to multitask.
Love to multitask, and I do need to... I don't have time in the mornings most time to actually play some of these games. So I've been playing Date Alive, and I wish I could remember what it was called.
I have to go and look at the stuff underneath the app.
Date
Alive,
Spirit... nope, that didn't help. Spirit Pledge.
Spirit Pledge, okay.
Spirit Pledge. So that is, it's, I think it either came out tail end of last week or very early this week. Date Alive is, as far as I know, like dating sim about an alien girl who's also a pop princess. I'm not 100% on that. Please don't attack me.
Okay, well, I should have known, shouldn't I?
They did a full remake, including like fan discs and stuff on PS4 called Date Alive Rio Reincarnation, which I own, but I've never actually got around to playing.
Multiple anime adaptions based on the light novel series written in 2013. 34 episodes of this thing. God damn.
So this...
Okay.
While you're looking it up so you can make more fun of me, this... So Spirit Pledge is sort of a cross between side-scrolling battler, where you control one of the characters who you also are trying to date, and they have to basically beat up waves of enemies using standard attacks, and you can chain those together with special moves, and like the combat in it is really like nice and flowy, so you can chain up like huge hit counter, and like it feels really, really smooth and really nice, and the battles themselves take no more than about 90 seconds, 2 minutes, so perfectly suited for that. And then as you progress through a story, you also have like these more involved visual novel sections where you're talking to the characters and you're going on dates with them. I don't think you actually are. I was in a bombed out school building at one point. I'm fairly certain that's not a date, at least not one that I've been on before.
There's more beyond just Nando's, right? don't limit your options, man.
That's standard visual novel fare. You have a bunch of choices that come up, you select them, you chat to them. I think they have like live 2D animation on them, so it's 2D characters, but they're moving about and changing poses and stuff like that. So it's like they've got that hugely in-depth RPG element, but it's also built off a visual novel series, and they've not forgotten that part as well. So I think it's a really interesting mix. It's free to play, so it'll have all the free to play trappings. And now I want to know why you look so confused, because I imagine you've fallen into a Wikipedia well of...
I'm just watching footage of it. In fairness, all the animation and it all looks very nice. Where does it rank on the cringe factor? Where are we in like...
One of the dialogue options I had recently was like, date me, please date me. And I'm like, okay, maybe not. My main character is a little bit cringy. There haven't been any sort of like, oh no, I've fallen over and now you can see up my skirt moments yet. But I'm sure that's coming.
I'm seeing some of the key art and I'm like, yeah.
you can sort of see that it would happen eventually. It does not happen in the first sort of opening half hour of the game.
I know your game, pal. Jesus. Okay, all right, fine. Well, this is extremely Rick Cowley. I'm happy to discuss it. Date Alive : Spirit Pledge - Global, to give it its full name over on Android. Dude. And it's got a lot of very good reviews. Got lots of very happy people playing with their dating warrior girls. Marvelous. All right, then we should probably mention this because this is a follow-on from what we did on Launchpad. Pascal's Wager, we've got a release date for the Tides of Oblivion expansion. I probably should have mentioned this in news. I thought it was sooner. Either way, I'll mention it anyway because it's going to be a premium thing. It's going to be a $2.99 add-on and it's going to be out on August the 20th. And if you want to know more of that, we've got all of the videos and the trailers and the things currently available as part of our Launchpad section. Let's go and have a look at that. I'm going to jump straight on to the other thing that you were playing, and sticking with the whole anime theme, although this one, this I've seen, as in I've watched the first series of this, and it's really good fun. Agretsuko has got a little tie-in mobile game. It's called The Short Timer Strikes Back, and it is a match 3 puzzler based on the little tiny... She's a red panda, isn't she?
Yes. Red panda called Retsuko, who works as... just a salary woman in an office.
A salary woman, yeah.
Yeah.
I love that term, salary woman. I seen it recently appear with relation to... They mention it in the Yakuza series.
Yes.
There's a great photo that was going around. I think it's probably Andy Kelly. Of what is the only good mobile... the only good game series in the world, which is Yakuza. And it's them taking... some dude taking a picture. Like, Kazuma Kiri is clearly doing, like, a photo shoot or something. So it's these topless dudes in the thing going... I can see the constrained face of the salary man under pressure. And he's doing the little heart emoji. It's the best game series, Rick. It really is.
It really is.
But yes, the hook of Agretsuko is that she's incredibly stressed at work. And so she goes out and she sings karaoke in, like, death metal karaoke. Yeah. And it's very sweet and funny.
So this is like a... So as you say, it's like a match 3, but it's also in the sort of vein of Gardenscapes, Homescapes, all that sort of thing, where you have like a home base that you're also building up using the stars that you earn in-game.
Okay.
The thing that makes it sort of different is that it's very much like a hardcore match 3 in the terms of like you have points that you are earning, and then like if you hit a certain threshold, you earn that many stars as well. And then you have to use those stars to level up your building and add more things to it. You also can't, like, choose what... you can choose the theme of the floor that you're building at the time, but you can't choose individual furniture elements. You can't recolor stuff or anything like that. So it's lacking a little bit on the actual base building element. But the match 3 stuff is there, and it's good. And it has lots of different objectives that it throws at you pretty early on. So, you know, you're not just matching characters, you're also defeating boss battles, which is really weird. And then you have to like collect flowers from vases and break open documents. And every now and then, like one of the characters will come up and throw a ninja rope up, and you have to cut the ninja rope to make them fall because they're a spy or something like this. So there's all sorts of different objectives that get thrown in. And then you go back and you level up your building. You can also level up your characters because they have like a different special ability, and all the characters are from the anime. So you start with Retsuko and I can't remember. There's a lot of characters in Agretsuko and I can't remember all their names.
I'm a fan of the big pig boss.
Big
pig boss is very funny.
Yeah.
The macho pig boss.
Yeah.
He keeps yelling about protein. That's very good.
Oh yes, the yoga guy. You also have from the start, I think, the secretary bird, whose name I don't remember, who is actually a secretary and also a secretary bird.
That's true.
And then you can start unlocking all the other characters, and all they have special abilities and stuff. And some of them appear as bosses and enemies in the game as well, which is kind of funny. And the main key draw of it is, with every few levels that you unlock, every few levels you complete, I think it's every 10 levels or something, you unlock an episode of the original anime. So Agretsuko started as like 1 minute, 2 minute anime segments that were kind of streamed online or as in like or in place of things. Yeah, it all started as like a very short thing. As you complete each block of levels, you unlock a new episode of that original run of anime to watch.
Gotcha. Because I saw that and I was like, they haven't made like 100 tiny short episodes of this just for the game.
No, they already had 100 tiny short episodes available.
Nice.
And then
makes sense.
Then it got picked up by Netflix and turned into 2 seasons, and 3rd season's coming soon. It's very competent as a match 3. It has that whole like cute... If you like Agretsuko and you like the characters and stuff, they're all there. They're all very cute. They're all doing their little things and all that kind of stuff. I don't really like the way it combines its base building and its match 3 elements, because I think tying it all to... The great thing about Homescapes and Gardenscapes and that kind of game is that you don't have a score that you're trying to get to unless that's the objective of the level.
Right.
So you're never sort of felt... You're never held back by skill in terms of how well you do in individual levels. It's just how many levels you can get through. Whereas this, you are held back by like your skill in the level. So if you don't get 3 stars in every level, it's going to take you much, much longer to keep leveling up the base and that kind of thing. So I don't like how it does that.
You don't like that it demands you be good?
Yes. I mean, you know, the other games of that sort of that caliber, that kind, do demand you to be good, but they don't demand you to be extra good all the time.
Sure.
If you just squeak by, you'll still get the rewards that you then can use to build up your thing. So I think it's lacking in that regard. But I think if you like match threes and you like Aggretsuko, there's definitely no reason not to play this one.
Okay.
It's also free, and as I say, like if you get every 10 levels or so, you unlock a new episode of the anime, which I don't know if it's ever been translated into English before.
I'd be curious to see what the little original version looks like.
It's weird. It's like it is.
That's kind of fun.
Like all the characters are still there, but they have different roles and different places and stuff, and they've clearly been changed and adapted for the Netflix version.
Nice.
And fleshed out a bit more. Whereas in the shorts, there's like different characters you'll see in the background of the main anime, but they're coming in to the fore on this one, which is kind of interesting.
Okay.
So yeah.
All right. Well, give that one a look. I'm curious about it now. Something that I played last week on the Launchpad stream, which was one of my favorite things that I played, is now out. So Lure, this appeared, and this is exactly my kind of thing, which is I like the lo-fi arcadey games with the very stripped down controls, and people who've listened to this for a bit know Super Hexagon is one of my touchstones for this, like a perfect, super simple but brilliant, and you can repeat it again and again and it never gets old. Lure is like, when you look at it, it's pulling an aesthetic from things like Asteroids. Like you are literally the triangle spaceship floating in the middle of the screen. And the first level opens with you, kind of the screen is presented as a big circle, and you're floating inside this circle, and at the center of the circle is a sun, and another red triangle pops onto screen, and it's like, go, and you don't know what you're supposed to do. And so it immediately starts to follow you, this red triangle. So you start moving around and, you know, using the thumbsticks to move left, right, and guide your little triangle away. And immediately I turn around and try and start to fire on it, because I'm like, Asteroids, right? So bust out the cannons, and nothing. You got no weapons. So I'm like, damn. And then you go, oh, hang on a minute, the game's called Lure. You're going to try and kite them along and get them into the sun. That's what you need to do. The only way to get rid of your enemy is to get them to follow you around in such a way that you can then like swoosh behind the sun, and then they pathfind straight through the sun, boof.
Right.
And that's how you get past the first level. And you're like, I am a genius. And then it starts throwing loads of other stuff on. So once you've got that core concept, that's it. And then you will come into a level and suddenly there are two suns. And so you have to be much more careful about the way you steer so you don't fly into it yourself. They might be much smaller, might be much bigger. You then get into a scenario where there are multiple enemies. And you're like, So then you have to start, like, you know, double avoiding plus luring and all the rest of it. And it gets even more tricky. And the space starts to, you know, get bigger spaces, smaller spaces to work in. And then you get a lovely little addition, which is, I think, level 10 or something. You start, and the sun is attached to the back of your ship. So it's like attached via a line. And so as you move, it's like just dragging behind you through space, like some kind of gigantic nuclear morning star.
Nice.
And you know, and as you spin around, you do handbrakes, so you kind of around after you. And so you then, you're suddenly, the enemies are still chasing you, but you can kind of turn around and be like, right then, come on then, and position it so you kind of swing the sun into them. And it's great. It's really good. Like, immediate, clean design, nice and responsive. Levels can be completed very, very quickly. And I love the way that it iterates on the single core sensible idea of just, they're chasing you. And it's one of those title games. It's Lure. Mm. Lure them into the sun. Boom. Job done. And it just keeps getting more and more. Now, I did get the unlocked version of it because it is a premium game. I think it's £2-3, I'm going to say.
I think it's free to start, though.
Yeah, but it's free to start. You can play the first 10 levels, which is what I was doing with my test flight build,
right,
on the stream, and then you can unlock after it. So I really recommend people give it a go. Just try the free version. If you don't like it, no big issue. But it's cool. Like, great, simple arcade stuff that feels good on mobile. You don't feel like you're at a disadvantage playing it on a touchscreen. Clean and fun and satisfying, and when you drag them in and bosh, you get that, oh, I'm good kind of feeling, which is exactly what I'm after. So do check that one out. Lure is the name. You can find video of it playing at the end of the second Launchpad episode, I think, but also out in the app stores at the moment. You played Merge Dungeon. Is that what you were playing? Is that the other thing?
Yes. Okay. There's a couple of other things, but that's the one I actually put some time into.
What is it? Because I've never played these Merge games much.
Okay, so, like, The merge gains, so merge dragons, anything that has merge in the title, basically. I think you said Triple Town. I don't know. I've never played Triple Town, so I don't know if it's exactly like that. But basically, it's
good. The things where you take two smaller things and they become a bigger thing.
Yeah, and then you like spawn in a new smaller thing, and then you have to keep adding more smaller things and then grouping them all together. And it's basically an idle game. But you just sort of incrementally keep growing stuff, and there's no real point to it, but it taps into something in your brain that's like, ooh, bigger, better, I gotta get more, I gotta keep doing this, and then you can just sort of keep doing it.
Exponential growth.
Exactly. So it's that, but it's mixed with sort of a side-scrolling RPG style that's been had a resurgence thanks to Darkest Dungeon, and the style is very reminiscent of Darkest Dungeon.
I did see a picture of this.
Yeah.
I saw it to the point where it's like, that's kind of shameless.
Yes. It is wearing its influences on its sleeve and every other part of its body. You've got these three heroes. I think it's a warrior, a ranger, and a sorcerer. And they are going through a dungeon, a side-scrolling, attacking enemies, and just continuing forward. Your role in all that is to... spawn in, like, craft new items. So you start with like a basic item, which will be their weapon, and then you can merge those two weapons and you'll get a hat, and then if you merge two hats you get a piece of armor, and if you merge two pieces of armor, and it keeps growing and growing. But each new thing that you merge also has like different stats that you can have, and it can, you can even like have, so a level one staff that you spawn in can still have better stats than the staff you've already equipped. So you've got to take into consideration all that, as well as like merging them together. So it's less about like sort of mindlessly merging, and it's more about spawn stuff in, check the stats. Okay, this one's better than this staff, so I'm going to replace it with that. And then I'm going to use that to merge with this, and it's going to make an even better version of this hat, and so on and so forth. So it's a bit more involved and in depth, but it still retains that kind of idle, you can drop out whenever you want and not play it sort of style. And then come back and pick it up again later, because you've got to wait for, you can't just endlessly spawn new items in. You have MP, which allows you to like create new items, and then you've got health as well, which is obviously going to go down as you get into fights and stuff. I don't think the combat is as in-depth as like Darkest Dungeon and like all those ilk, but yeah, the presentation is so close to that it is borderline lawsuit worthy. Not that I'm gonna, you know, put my foot down on that one.
No, but you can't look at the two things side by side and not go, ooh, similarities.
Yeah, exactly.
I will say for this merging, their idle animation is very weird. Like the characters, they're kind of, you know, I'm not doing anything. It looks like they look like those flaily arm things that you get that blow, you know, air outside of car dealerships in the States.
Yeah,
that's their idle animation. It's a bit weird. Is it fun, or is it?
I don't know. I played it for like a few minutes, and I was like, "Oh, I fully understand the concept and what I'm supposed to be doing." Okay, now I'm kind of done with it. So I think if you were willing, because it's got objectives and stuff which steer you towards doing certain things. So, and you have to like, each character has their own sort of equipment that you're merging, so it's not just one merge screen. You have three different screens, and you can just keep spawning stuff in for different characters. And the objectives steer you towards, it's like, okay, we'll do 7 merges for the archer now do 10 merges for the sorcerer and that kind of thing. So I imagine if I had more time and I actually sat down with it and went through it, I'd probably get hooked into it. I don't know if it's that fun, but it definitely has that kind of like, okay, yeah, I can see where I'm going to keep incrementing my power and my wealth and that kind of thing, and that's appealing. But there's
the numbers going up.
Yeah, but it's that sort of thing where it's just the numbers going up. There's nothing in there that immediately leaps out at you and goes, "Oh, this is so new and original and amazing that I'm going to keep playing it and I'm going to get really invested in it." It's one of those games that I think you could fall into if you allowed yourself to.
Gotcha.
But if all right. that sort of depends on if you don't already have a merge game that you're already playing, and like the Darkest Dungeon aesthetic, which personally I don't. Controversial opinion.
I did like Darkest Dungeon and the aesthetic.
Yeah.
But this is not as good version of it. This doesn't look as good. All right then. Merge Dungeon is the name of that one. I'm guessing that's a free to play thing. That's on all the platforms.
Totally free.
Right. The last thing I'll mention, because we kind of run out of time here, is Gloom Digital Edition is coming to mobile as well, which I only mentioned because I played a lot of this on Steam. And this is a... In pre-release, I think. It's a board game, And it's interesting because the objective is the opposite of what the objective usually is, which is you're playing across from someone else. The idea is you choose one of four families to play as. And there are all these, like, kind of one of them is like a carnival freak show family, and the other one is like an aristocratic family, and they're all like kind of characters out of the Addams Family. And so they're all kind of horror, spooky characters. Mm-hmm. And the idea is you have to engineer your own death. You have to make it so that your family is as miserable and as sick and the most terrible things happen to them as possible. And conversely, you have to ensure the other family is doing very well and having a prosperous time, making lots of money and being very healthy and generally enjoying life. And you're playing against each other to effectively do them a favor. And they go, oh, you gave me loads of money, you bastard. And that's the dynamic of the game. The thing that made the game interesting from a mechanical perspective is you're doing this by your laying cards down. You have a selection of cards that you can choose to play on certain family members. And those cards have three stats on them. Mm-hmm. And those stats will affect certain things. Like, but the thing that's really interesting about it is not so much like, oh, you can alter stats and everything. The cards themselves are... some of them, or all of them, transparent. So the cards are made with a plastic kind of transparency, and then they have information on it, and then they have those numbers, three numbers going down the side. And some will be positive, and some will be negative. Mm-hmm. So you'll have might have minus 10, minus 5, minus 15, and these are all red circles. And so if you put that down on someone else's character, it says, like, right, you're reducing certain stats by 10, or you're increasing them, you're plussing them up. And so someone gives you a card which, like, you go, discard your entire hand. A person can only take so much heartache. You lay the deed of despair. And so you've got that card, and what it does is it makes you incredibly miserable because someone's just died. So you take that card and you lay it on one of your own family members because mm-hmm. you're trying to mess yourself up, right? That's the idea. So what then the opponent can do is go, all right, well, I've got this card called Fantastic Day Out. And what it's going to do is it's going to increase... all of your stats, but I'm going to lay it down on that person's character, so they're going to lay their good card on top of your bad card,
right?
And because it's transparent, one sits on top of the other, and the numbers from the card on top may overlay and cover up the numbers on the card beneath, but it might not, because it may be that only this card only has two numbers on it.
Right.
And the third one, there's a gap. So the number still remains from the card that's sitting underneath. Mm-hmm. And so it ends up being like, well, this is plus 5 and plus 4 now, but there's still that minus 15 modifier from the previous card underneath. So overall, we're still at a negative. And so it's about looking at your hand, choosing whether you want to play it on your family or their family. And then, depending on what they've just done, you might want to try and, like, negate the effect of their card, mm-hmm. either on them or you. And that's quite interesting. I'd not seen that transparent card dynamic thing. It was quite clever. Digital version is the one I played on Steam, and they're bringing that over to mobile. Apparently, it's out now. We are trying to get it for the joint account. I can see it working because it worked perfectly fine.
Yeah.
On the Steam version, it was just noteworthy for that slightly weird mechanic. I'm not sure how compelling it was. I kind of got it, and after a few rounds of it, you're like, all right, I think I may have sort of seen the walls of this and where this ends. But I certainly thought it was a novel little idea. We'd like to see how the mobile version works before we say it's any good. But you can see, I think, streams of it way back on the Twitch channel from ages ago, perhaps. But yeah, the name is Gloom Digital Edition. That's out right now, and that's going to be, I'm sure it'll be premium on the iPhone and the iPad as well. Why not? All right, we're done. That felt a lot more low energy and chill than the Launchpad streams, which I was a lot more panicky about. This is easy in comparison. Thanks for listening and watching if you're on the YouTube. And again, if you missed out on last week's stuff, go and check the YouTube channel. There's loads of content there to catch up on. It basically serves as a big 2-hour podcast, really. And you get lots of different guests.
We certainly went on enough tangents for it to consist as a podcast.
I want to put as not as much non-relevant information there as possible.
Desperately lassoing you back into the world of mobile games.
No, I will not be restrained, Rick. You cannot keep me in your tiny little prison. I will be free. So thank you all for watching this one. We're back again next week for more. Thanks for joining me, Rick.
Thank you for having me. It is a pleasure as always.
And we will see you all next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.